have to do that. And school is just a good place to keep track of her friends. Well, I don't feel that it's right to require of her that she get straight A's. But I don't think I'd let her just talk on the phone all the time either. So we strike a balance with that. And I believe that someday she'll get a job, and it'll probably be a good job, and they'll never look at her resume. They'll just listen to her. I had a lady who brought her daughter in to me, and she said, "I'm really worried about her. My son's a nuclear physicist, and he stayed at home all the time studying, and she likes to be on the phone." And this girl came in, and she was just a redheaded gal and real loud, and got set in a chair and put her feet up on my desk and started telling me about the sex life of her friends. And just on and on and on. I mean, she just talked and no inhibitions whatsoever. And I told the mother, I said, "You're completely out of order to try to do the same for this girl as you did your son. You have two different temperaments there. If I really want to punish my daughter, all I need to do is take away the telephone from her or make her go sit in a corner." Now, my son, who's a perfectionist, if I punish him by making him sit in the corner, he just entered into the seventh level of heaven. Because he's going to sit there and count the dots he sees ahead of him and seeing what kind of order they're in and all that, and before you know it, he's burnt an hour. I can tell him that his punishment is to write his name 100 times, and he lines the letters up on each page to see what it's like. And so our kids are different. And when we see the temperaments in our families, we even pray for our kids differently. My daughter's a real expressive, and one of the things I always pray for her is that she not follow the morals of the crowd around her, that she be able to stand fast in that. My one son's real laid back, and I just pray for him that he not be lazy in the things of the Lord. My son, who's a melancholy and a perfectionist, I ask that the Lord protect him from depression and focusing on the negative and being absorbed with that to the point that he can't see the good in God around him. So it's different for every child, and we want to be able to get into their shoes too and understand them. The other thing temperament's going to do is it'll help you understand how the enemy's going to attack you. And he'll use different things to attack different people. If you take the expressive or the feeling person or the sanguine type person, one of the things that will really work them over is perceived rejection. If somebody at church just stared at them funny, they'll have all kinds of guilt and worry and that kind of thing. If you take a melancholy, the one place the enemy can really attack them is in the area of security, because melancholies always sense impending financial doom. And they're little squirrels that have never stored up enough nuts yet. And they keep waiting and waiting, and they're afraid of that. Well, the enemy is definitely going to work them over when they lose a job, when there is some insecurity in the situation. So I think you can see that the information is really quite valuable. Now let's look, first of all, at the four basic temperaments, and I'll give you a little rundown of that. Now, we'll look at this on your test first. Four basic temperaments. In this test, they call it a driver, an influencer, a steady, or a compliant temperament. I don't like any of those names. And I don't like the Greek names that they use. This is called a choleric, a sanguine, a phlegmatic, and a melancholy. Well, what's that do for you? I got no idea at all what they're talking about. A lot of money has been spent trying to come up with terms that describe just one title, these temperaments. I like best driver, the D, the I temperament called expressive, the expressive person. The S is an amiable, just the easygoing type. And then the C, instead of perfectionist or melancholy or compliant, I really think the word that describes them best is analytical. An analytical type person. I want to look at each of those temperaments with you just briefly, and then I'll tell you what your test says and what your test means. If you look at the members of the body, we can equate the drivers with the muscle. The more muscle you have, the more you can get done. Drivers are people who see no obstacles. And I really believe that God created them to go out into new work. They're the entrepreneurs. They're the people that get things done. If you want to see a great movie about a driver, see the movie Tucker, about the fellow who developed an automobile and got it sold with a staff of four and the thing designed and built. He's a driver. He can't see any obstacles. And he also can't see any people. He's task-oriented. He'll run right up people's back to get those things done. About 5% of people are drivers. They really like to drive. Now, if you're a woman and you're a driver, that does not mean you can't be submissive. That has nothing to do with that. And we never use our temperament as an excuse for our behavior. Well, I ran right up your back because I'm a driver. No, you ran right up my back because you're a carnal driver. That's why you did that. And there's a consistency in the temperaments. And that consistency for the Christian is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Those are not temperament qualities. Those are qualities that every Christian must possess. And so we're not saying because I'm a driver and I'm task-oriented that I don't have to possess some of the fruit of the Spirit. Now you see the drive work in a wonderful way in Paul. He goes into a city. They're upset with him. They beat him half to death. They stone him. They leave him for dead. They go out there and pray for him, and he comes to and says, hey, things are looking up. He's excited. He enjoyed that. The expressive temperament, again, is the feeler. If you think of the human body, it's the eyes, the touch, smell. It's the things in the body that put you in touch with the world outside you. And expressive people are real feelers. Now, when that feeling is not under the rule of the Spirit, those people are crying when they see the leaves fall off the trees in the fall. That just upsets them. They can hardly take it. When they're not under the rule of the Spirit, they're real manipulators because they really know how to work people. These people lead, these people drive, and these people lead. And about 5% of people fit into that category. Now, the most unique members of the body of Christ, I think, are these two, the amiable and the perfectionist or analytical. And in my studies, about 45% fit there and about 45% there. That seems like a lot, doesn't it? And yet, when you look at the human body, what makes it function are the perfectionist members of that body. Now, your heart is a perfectionist member. Do you want it to do anything other than beat? That's all it does. Now, I was sharing the other day, there's a fellow in Denver who's had 85% of his spine removed from Vietnam. And he's really a strange fellow to look at. And I was in at the Olympics in Seoul, Korea, when they had the people there like him who were doing the lifting and stuff like that. And I saw several fellows like that. And it's absolutely incredible that somebody can function. But the reason they can function is that perfectionist member never left them, the heart. So these people are basically perfectionists. They like perfection. One of the traits that they have is they keep a lot of lists. And they have lists of what they ought to do. And they have little grocery lists. And they have little lists about how the house ought to be cleaned. My secretary had a Rolodex that listed what you do here in 15-minute segments to clean the house throughout the week, 7 days a week. And you can just file it up what you're supposed to be doing at 12:05. And she had it down there. Those people love lists. What they tell you about the perfectionist type temperaments and almost any research that you do is that they're the most gifted, the most intellectual, the Michelangelos, the Bells, people like that, And then the third thing they'll tell you in research is, and when you tell them that, they won't believe you. And here's why they don't believe you. The world in its testing says this up here is intelligent and gifted. I don't have any problem buying that because I live down here. It makes sense to me that to be smart, you got to be smarter than I am. I can understand that. So I look up there and I don't have a problem with it. But the perfectionist stands on that, and since they're standing there, they believe it's got to be somewhere way off here. And since it's not defined for them, and they like things clearly defined, they want security, they want to know exactly what they have to do. Since it's not defined for them, and they're standing on it, therefore they've never arrived. Now they don't know what it is, but there's always this sense that I'm not there, that I haven't done enough, that God's not happy with me, that there's more to do. The analytical temperament has more suicide in it than all of these combined. And the reason they have that, if we could just look at... These temperaments in another way. Now I'm giving you some quick general information, but it basically goes like this, temperaments. Right here at the top, we'll put the melancholy or the analytical temperament. And the reason I put them at the top of the pyramid is that they are consumed with the dots of life. The little things in life, that's what they look at. And they take any event, they put it under a microscope, and they stare at it, and if it's something you said, they stare at it till it's not anything you said, and they start doing a little war dance around that microscope, and then they want you to join it with them. Because they've thought this thing out. That's how an analytical works. They think about point A, and they look at it and examine it and examine it and examine it and examine it, and pretty soon they're way out here. We don't know how they got there, but it all makes sense to them. Here's the advantage of that temperament. I've got a friend who's an extreme, we'd call it a compulsive analytical. His mind is always working. And that's what's true about the S or the C temperament, the amiable or the analytical temperament. Their minds are always working. They're always thinking. They're always kicking things around. They never stop. They have excessive mental energy. And so they begin to think about things on and on and on. The problem is, if they see one negative thing in their lives, it becomes a major because all they can do is focus on it. Or they see it in someone else's life. So this fellow's a computer board designer for a major company. He had a meeting on Monday morning. It's a week-long meeting, and they introduce the new computer board, and in the middle is this chip that only one company makes, but it's a super chip and it'll outdo anything that anyone else has. And that's really interesting. That's going to be their claim to fame. They go on Tuesday talking about manufacturing, then they talk about marketing and sales, then they talk about distribution centers, then they talk about bonus plans, and they finish up Saturday evening at 9 o'clock. And the president of the company says, "Are there any questions?" And my buddy raises his hand and goes, "About that chip. He hasn't ever left this." And everybody's looking at him, we remember showing that at 8 o'clock Monday. What are we doing talking about that chip now? And he said, "Well, I've been thinking, there's only one company that makes that chip. And what if after we're in production, they double the price? What if they triple the price?" And the president of the company goes, "Yeah, what if?" And he looks over at his management team and he's glaring at them. And he said, "Well, I got a plan. I've been working on it all week. We can use the chip everyone else uses and put it over here in this corner. And I've got a little one designed that'll make up the difference and basically duplicate this one. And this will be our own chip, and this one is made by 20 companies, and if they double the price, we'll go with someone else." And the president thinks this guy's a god. He's just come down from heaven. But he also spends a lot of time analyzing the lint in his navel. And he can't seem to get past that. He's got one little thing wrong in his life, and he just looks and looks and looks and looks, and he's just consumed by it. Another thing about these temperaments is the fact that they have a sharp, cutting, critical sense of humor. And they use that to control others. And while we're on control, I want to say that is a very controlling temperament. Because they have that perfectionist element, they want to control everything and everybody around them so they won't have any insecurity. Now, put that temperament in a family where mom gets a divorce, where they've had to move three or four times as they've grown up, and you got somebody who's really a mess. And what you'll find is they'll keep retreating to some little corner where they can control everything around them. They are a very controlling temperament. They want everything just right. But they do have a cutting sense of humor that'll put you off and control you. My son's a melancholy. My daughter came in the other day. He's eating his cereal. She says, "Zeb, would you like me to show you the collage I just finished for school?" He never even looks at her. "Catch me someday when I'm not mobile." He just keeps eating. Doesn't say another word. He just goes on. He doesn't care. I mean, he had her in her place in a hurry. I was sitting down with him watching television the other night, and he's looking straight ahead at the TV, and I said, I just happened to be looking at his profile, and I said, "You know, Zeb, you look more like me than any of the other kids. Guess I better start saving my allowance for a health club membership." Just straight ahead. I was razzing Betty about something, and he was sitting there eating his lunch, and she was telling me something. I said, "Betty, I don't want to hear that." I was joking with her, and she turns to Zeb and says, "Zeb, you're not going to treat your wife that way, are you? You're going to let her share her opinions if she's educated." Now, those melancholies, they just slip in there on you, and they like to kind of cut the ground out from under you. And they have a way of not taking you too seriously. So we put these people at the top, and a good animal that describes this temperament when you're closer to the top is a little beaver, because they like to stay in one place, they like to take care of things, they like to work in one area. Now, at the bottom of this, we put the driver, and he's like the mountain lion. Likes to range and roam, likes variety, likes a lot of different things, doesn't like any kind of control over his life. And if you put a mountain lion in a cage, what's it do? Just starts pacing. And you corner one of these drivers and tell him you want to talk business, and you can just watch them start pacing emotionally, back and forth, back and forth. They don't like that kind of thing. And the driver's interesting, and I put them at the bottom because these people see the dots of life, and a driver can be up to his waist in Cameroon and say, "It's going to be a good day." Yeah, they look out there and just all they can see is the sun coming up, and it's going to be great. And then, of course, these other temperaments will fit in between here, and there's 16 different temperament blends that we're looking at, and there'll be a blend between these two. Now, what kind of temperament do you suppose is on television most of the time? Yeah, an I or a D, right? All these financial programs you can see all night long, tell you how to get rich. You can sell pyramid domes to go over your bed, or magnetic pillows, or whatever. They got all this stuff. Those guys are drivers. And what are they telling you? "I'm successful and you're a failure. And you need to see what a success is, so I'm going to let you look a while at me." And what are the eyes telling the leaders that are on television? Same kind of thing. This is what successful is. I did this dramatic thing, and I did this big thing, and I did this thing over here, and I did this, and I did that. And these people set the standard for our society. Therefore, if you're 90% of the people, you have a built-in inferiority that comes every time you turn on the television set. And we'll go one step further. What kind of person is normally a pastor? The D or the I. And he develops a program for church growth that centers around what he does normally. Now, the majority of pastors, if they were not pastors, they would make good Hoover vacuum cleaner salesmen. Going door to door. They like to talk. They like to go at it. Now, if the pastor comes around and he's developed a program of spiritual growth and evangelism that centers around what he could do in the flesh. And what he says is, if you're really spiritual, you'll go door to door knocking on people's homes. Now, if he tells that to Dave Templeton and I, we'd have a lot of fun doing that. We'd go door to door. We'd probably make it to one house, have a good time sitting there yakking all night or arguing. We don't care. Just so we're talking, it's fun. But an analytical is sitting there and saying, I wouldn't like someone coming into my house uninvited. I wouldn't like someone knocking on my door and sitting and interrupting. I like a system. I don't like to be confused like that. I like to think through things. And yet the preacher's telling you, you'll never be spiritual till you lead 25 people to Christ this week. Until you knock door to door. And so you have to force yourself to go out. And what we've basically done then is developed programs that don't meet the majority of the people. I came home one lunch and my wife was crying, and I rarely see her cry. And I said, what are you crying about? And until I got a lot of sensitivity, what are you bawling about? Get a little of this going. And she said, well, I just heard that in the church in Korea, you can't be a member unless you've led someone to Christ. And I said, so? And she said, well, I've never led anyone to Christ. I didn't know that, never even thought about it. She hasn't led anyone to Christ, but she's discipled a lot of people. She's had a lot of people that have fallen. And I learned that if I want her to follow up on somebody, I can't say, here's the phone number, go get together. Instead, I say, let's the three of us go out for lunch. And I introduce them, and they get to talk. And then we go out for lunch again and introduce, and pretty soon they're getting together on their own, and she's helping this gal out. And I said, first of all, Scripture doesn't say that. But I could see in her then, for the first time, the inferiority that had been built into her through Christianity. It had actually made her feel inferior. And we cannot allow others to define what success is for us. Instead, we need God to define what success is for you. What do you need to do? And we need to understand, if we're on this end of the scale, that just as difficult as it is for this person to go door to door with some big program, it's just as difficult for us to have to settle down and disciple one. Now, the weakest churches I visit are the biggest churches. And they're led by a guy like this that wants more and more and more members. And a lot of the members actually feel like they've been raped. Because what he does is he goes to their house and visits them and stops by and he has lunch and he spends time with them. And then when they join and they got a problem, he doesn't want to talk to them. He doesn't want to see him. He doesn't want the time commitment that it's going to take. And he hasn't recognized his need for these people, so he hasn't developed anyone to send them to. Instead, he wants to go get this other member that he's working on and get them to join, or this other person, because he wants to continue to keep the thing growing. I was counseling a millionaire and asking how he became one, and he said, it's really simple. All you have to do is subcontract your weaknesses. Said most people in business only hire people that are exactly like them. I hire people that are opposite of me, and we fight all the time, and I keep going to the bank. He said, the only thing I require is they never slander the company or they're fired. Well, I think we have that variety in the body of Christ. And the only thing we can't do is slander others. But we have the right to be different, to understand where they're at and see the differences in needs. If I'm on the Titanic and it's sinking, and there's four of us guys there, and we're going to go down. There's four guys and me. And there's no boat for us, so we're going to die. You know who I want with me? I want a driver. And they take chances. They take risks. Their minds operate just like that. And he's going to say to me, listen, guys, everybody give me your belts. Grab those oars over there and those pieces of wood that are floating. We're going to strap them together, jump off, and float. Hey, that's a plan. And I'm ready because the water's coming up. You know what the high eye will do to me? He'll walk up and put his arms around me in all sincerity and with tears in his eyes and say, man, I hate it. You're going to die with three kids. I really feel sorry for you. It's too bad you're going to just die here in just a minute. And he'll start weeping. But he doesn't have a plan. Now the S and the C, what they'll do to me at that moment is this. What makes you think that'll work if I give you my belt? They want it proven to them. They want all this information. And the water just keeps coming out. If I'm sitting in a restaurant and I've been eating a steak and I got a great big chunk of meat and lettuce stuck right here in between my teeth, the high eye person's in a real dilemma. They don't know quite what to do because if they say something, they might offend me. And they don't want to embarrass me because they feel so much for me. They just hate to say something. But on the other hand, boy, they hate to see me going out of there and everybody making fun of me because there's a big chunk of lettuce and meat sticking in between my teeth. They're in turmoil. The S, he doesn't really care because he never notices that kind of stuff anyway. He's just laying back wondering when the pie's coming. And he doesn't care if your teeth fall out in front of him. He just wants the pie. The high C, they affix and obsess on it. And they just sit there, and all while you're talking and drinking your coffee, they're like this at you. And they can't go past that chunk of meat. But the driver's the one that annoys me the most because without saying a word, he gets out his buck knife and reaches over and digs it out of my teeth. And of course, as he does that, it cuts my lip clear down to my jaw. And he doesn't apologize. What he says is, that's what Band-Aids are for. Absolutely. No sensitivity. Okay. In the first diagram here, graph one, that shows you what your basic temperament pattern is in a social setting, in a room full of people. And I want you to look at what your primary and secondary temperament is. So you may have a high S there, a high C, or whatever. You have a primary and a secondary temperament. So in a group, you'll either be a driver, you'll be more of a leader. The S is a group-oriented person. He can work with several people. Or you may be a perfectionist and you want to be left alone and you don't want people dabbling in your thing and messing up your stuff. That's in a social setting or a work group environment. So one of the things that can drive you crazy if you're the C or S temperament is to have a boss that changes directions all the time. Or to have a mate that's changing directions on you all the time. The second graph looks at the area of control. How do you handle control? What do you do with control? How much of it do you want? And of course you'll see the driver that'll be all the way up here. He'll want control, and often the C temperament will want all the control it can get too. But they want it for different reasons. The driver uses people, perfectionist avoids people. The perfectionist would like control so nobody messes up their things. The driver wants control to use people and to get things on, keep moving. So it'll tell you where you're at in the area of control. So when it comes to control, we can see you operate that way. Again, I want to remind you that temperaments are like a hammer. They're neither positive or negative. It just depends on how you use it. You know, it's not good or bad, a temperament. It depends wholly how that temperament is used. For example, a choleric or a driving temperament, one of the things they'll say about them is they're self-righteous. How is self-righteousness a positive trait under the rule of the Spirit? Well, I think we got a pretty good example of it. I, Paul, went up to Jerusalem to see some of the nobodies. What they are is nothing to me. They can call themselves whatever they want, but they're nobody. Imitate me because I imitate Christ. See, that's righteousness or self-righteousness or that firm stand in a positive light. He used that in a positive way. So you can see any of these elements can be positive under the rule of the Spirit. And then the difference is my self-perception. It's the one we really want to focus on the most because that is often the deepest me, my deepest temperament. And it also has to do with how I handle affection. If you're married to a high eye, you can tell them that you love them 100 times and that 101st wouldn't hurt a thing. Just one more time. If you're married to the high C all the way up here, one of the things that they don't like is when you're around them and you start hugging them, they start feeling smothered. They don't like that. And if you're married to someone like that, that can be kind of difficult. Especially if you're one of these high eyes and you want to show a lot of affection. So I want to show a lot of affection and my wife doesn't need a lot of affection. Now, when the cross is working, I'm free to let her be who she is and to know that she doesn't have the same need for affection that I do. That a simple pat on the back or a kiss on the cheek is plenty. And on the other hand, when she's walking in the cross, she can see that I need a little more affection. And she's free to give me that more of that affection. So understanding without the cross won't do you any good at all. But this tells you how a person handles affection. The other thing I just want to mention in passing that I think is valuable, and that is the energy levels of these different temperaments. And a lot of study has gone into that. What are the energy levels of a temperament? I did some research or did some work with research, and in that they'd done 500,000 temperament studies. And here's what they found. You have high energy, and then there's a low energy person. The D starts high and falls into bed. They just run, and then they drop. The I temperament starts low, and by 2 in the morning, he's just now on a roll. He's ready to go. It just builds throughout the day. Slow to get out of bed, but ready to keep going. Then you have the S temperament, and they're interesting because they're right here. They're never really all that energetic, but they're really not dead either. So you have the S that does this, the D here, the I here, and the C temperament will start normally with high energy and they bottom out at the end of the day. They're out of energy. And if you have a C temperament, one of the things that I recommend is, first of all, you understand how to deal with your anger constructively. C and S temperament do not have the luxury of daily explosions. The D and I do. Now, I have daily and hourly explosions, and because they're daily and hourly, nobody notices them. I get in the car, and I'm upset with my wife, and I get down to the corner and say, what's the difference? If I keep acting like this, she won't kiss me again. I got to quit that. I want the affection. I got to stop that. I don't want to hold a grudge. And if you're married to a D or an I, you don't know how much freedom you really have to fail. Because they don't have you on performance-based acceptance. It's just not there. I had a couple that came in, and she's a high C temperament, and she keeps lists of everything he's done wrong. And she said, well, this session, I think we just need to get it all out, everything that we have against each other. And she started talking, and an hour and a half later, he and I are just sitting there looking, and it just goes on and on and on, and she gets done, and she said, there, that's it. Then she looks at him and says, read your list. And he said, I don't have one. She goes, yes, you do, because she believes you who judge practice the same things, and she believes that he must have a list because she has one. But he didn't have a list. You have a lot of freedom to fail with those temperaments. They're different. But for me, I have little explosions and I'm over it. The melancholy or analytical temperament or the S temperament do not have the luxury of daily explosions. What they do is they put everything in the pressure cooker. Everything goes in that pressure cooker, and it builds and builds and builds, and when they blow, it's 5 years worth of stuff. Do you remember what you said about me in front of your mother? When was it? 81? No, I don't remember that. Well, I wish you would, because it proves everything I'm saying right now. And they go right on through that, and they've just exploded. So what I tell the high seer, the melancholy temperament, to do is, in order to help you have those daily explosions, and there isn't anything wrong with anger. Anger is a legitimate emotion. And the command is, though, to be angry and not sin, to not let the sun go down on your anger. So it would do good if you're a high seer, high F, to keep a little journal, and when something frustrates you, write it out and look at it and read it. And see what it says and analyze it there, but get it out. Be able to communicate it and verbalize it and get the thing going and not have that stuff continually building up. The other thing is there's a total difference in decision making. If you have two C's living together, their conversation goes like this in the hallway. You want to go to the show tonight? Well, I don't know. Do you? Well, I don't know. Do you? Well, do you? I don't know. Well, it's too late now. I guess we'll go to bed. And that's the end of it. If you got two high eyes living together, never call their house because they're not home. They're gone. They're out somewhere. And if you got two D's living together, never visit because there's nothing like a good fight to get things going. Now, as we look at these energy levels and the difference in temperament, we see that the driving temperament's up there high. The C temperament starts high and comes out low. Now, if you're married to a C, what's the worst time of the day to discuss something? When's it going to be? Yeah. Right here. They've bottomed out at the end of the day. They're out of energy by evening. And not only that, people have drained their energy. And if they're in a people-intensive job, they're ready to go mad. They say that the average man has 15,000 words to speak a day, and the average woman has 50,000. Well, I don't believe that. I think the average C temperament has 15,000 and the average I temperament's got 50,000. I think it's more temperament than man and woman. But it's going to be awful hard to dialogue with someone who's sick of people and just bottomed out. And what you'll find if you're married to the high C and you're planning on sex that night, they're dreaming up every reason to get to bed before you get there and go to sleep. They don't want to be there because they're too tired to put up with any of that. And they've got all the excuses they can. The best thing you can do is come home at lunch. And that's where you'll get along the best. But don't try that in the morning if you're married to a high eye, because he'll think it was a dream in somebody else. He just won't be awake and up and at him. So that's just it. But we look at those differences again in the temperament, the energy levels, the decisions that we make. There's a lot of information about that. And what I want you to see is that your mate is normal. And what's normal for them. I will say this too, that a lot of melancholy or the high C temperaments and S's go through a lot of obsessions. They have a lot of rituals. They obsess on certain thoughts. They have little things that they're doing, like twisting their thumb to make sure the back of their neck doesn't hurt. And they have all these little things they do because they have excessive mental energy, and there isn't anything wrong with that. There's nothing abnormal about that at all for that temperament. That's exactly what they do. And so you've had those things as you were a kid and thought you were weird and could never tell anyone, but that is normal, all of that kind of stuff. Now, I'll look at the basic pattern. We'll just look in the difference column. Now, I'm going to throw these up, and there's only a couple of things I want you to see about them. But you've got a pattern in the difference column, and that's the one we want to look at. We'll run through yours. The achiever. And I'm only going to point out one thing about that. I'll leave these up there if you want some more information and get copies of it or whatever. But the thing I'd like you to look at, if you're an achiever, is your main fear. What's the thing that bothers you? And it says others with competing or inferior work standards. See, you're a high S there and you want to do things right. And the biblical character is Martha and Nehemiah. The agent pattern, worst fear, is dissension and conflict. Because this person has the ability to work in a group, the high S, and the ability, and he loves people. So he doesn't want any of that kind of thing to take place. That's Abraham and Hannah. Appraiser pattern, and notice they're a high I, but they have a lot of perfectionism in them. So they love people, but they have a lot of standards. And they don't want to lose or look bad to others. Now, you can reject people in different ways. You can say to the high I, don't like you, and it'll destroy them. You can say to the high C, I don't like your work, and it'll destroy them. They could care less if you don't like them, because they've never liked themselves anyway. They never were able to do it good enough. Counselor pattern. Again, fear, we see a high-eyed person, and they have a fear of pressuring people or being accused of causing harm because they have so many peopling skills. They want to encourage and see people go on. If they think that they've harmed someone, it's really going to bother them. And again, when we look at obsessions, one thing that can really hurt them is if they've had any thoughts at all, which are just merely temptations that the enemy puts in their mind about hurting others, it's going to cause them problems. The creative pattern, this is an interesting one, a drive, and the high driver is low on peopling skills. They need to be because they're task-oriented, but on the other hand, they're a perfectionist, a driver that's a perfectionist. Now, where you'll see that is in an artist, or have you ever noticed one of these dress designers that's running around screaming and yelling and knocking things over because it's just not quite right? See, they have a lot of drive, so to get done what they want to get done, they need people, but people don't do it perfectly. And they can really get upset. Worst fear, not being influential, failure to achieve their standards. Michelangelo is one of them. Lays on his back painting and kills himself because nobody else could do it right. Developer, this is the straight D, and they want to get the job done. Their worst fear, look at this, boredom or loss of control. They want a lot of challenge. And that's something that helps you with a kid if you have one like that. Inspirational pattern. They have a lot of drive and a lot of peopling skills, so they got a plan for people. The worst fear is being too soft or loss of social status, and you'd see Stephen, he's a real encourager. He really moves people on. Now, a driver can often get behind people with a whip, and a leader can pull them, but this particular pattern just takes them right along. Investigator is a real steady person, the amiable, yet a level of perfection, and the worst fear is involvement with masses or selling abstract ideas. Now, if you're the C or S temperament, you need someone else to sell you. And I'll tell you right now, one of the things that will frustrate you is you know you do the majority of the work, and it's usually your idea, and you got it done right, and you made it happen, but the guy that hands out juicy fruit to everyone and slaps them on the back got the promotion. And that's pretty frustrating. So you need some people that will promote you. Some people that see what's in you and the qualities that are there and will promote those things. Objective thinker, straight up, totally analytical there. Irrational acts or ridicule. Type pattern is basically someone that can do anything. They can almost do anything at all. They can lead. They can be led. They can do the job right. They have all those things in them. And sometimes they have real problems in life because it's hard finding the thing that really satisfies because they can do it all. If you're a little higher in those temperaments, it's easier to find the thing that really satisfies you. But it's difficult when you're a jack of all trades. And it's hard to find the one to master because you're just kind of level right there. And that's a tight pattern. Perfectionist pattern, we got that up there. Antagonism, they don't like that. Again, that would have to do with task. Then you have a persuader pattern that basically has the peopling skills, some drive, and some perfectionism. But what they hate is a fixed environment or complex relationships. They like some movement and variety and doing different things. Practitioner. And you notice all these things begin to come up on the practitioner. And they are a practical person. But they have a fear of being too predictable or being unrecognized. And of course, that high C in a person will always make you feel slow and dumb, no matter how intelligent you are, because you're analytical. And when you get in discussions with the high I or high D, they just talk a circle around you and you start to feel dumb and slow. And that has nothing to do with that. It has to do with temperament. Promoter, he can sell you ice cubes in Alaska and make you glad that you bought them, because he just makes you feel good. A lot of peopling skills, and fear is loss of social acceptance and self-worth. Result-oriented pattern, that's way up here, it's close to being a developer. Others will take advantage of them. Slowness, especially in task activities, being too soft or too close with others. He's got the eye in there that causes some of that. Okay, you can have a specialist. And a specialist is the high S. They're task-oriented with some perfection. And their worst fear is change or disorganization. Now, I've left you a little sheet that you can look at. Of course, we're going to give you all the material. But there's one that looks like this. Now, I'd like you to examine it with this in mind. We ought to subcontract our weaknesses. That we need others around us. And that we're free to be who we are, and we ought to enter into self-love. So you can look at that, and what I like about it is, it describes the person, their tendencies, the environment that they like. And on the other hand, it also describes the kind of people that they need and gives them an action plan. And I think many times what you'll see there is you're married to the person that you need. That they're actually giving you a lot of the things that are crucial for your development and your growth. So go ahead and look at that. Now I want to close with one idea that we've been building on all weekend, and then we'll take just about, a 5-minute break, not a 15. And you can just kind of stand up there and we'll turn it over to Scott. But one of the things I've been asking this weekend is for people to give me 10 things that they need to do to secure the presence of Christ, to make sure that they grow as a Christian, to make sure that they're in the will of God, to make sure that they're a good parent. And I've been asking just that simple question, can you give me 10 things that you ought to be doing to make sure that you grow? And most people can give me those. A lot of things begin to run through their minds, and we mentioned some this morning. I need to have some scripture memory. I ought to be reading the Bible. I ought to be submitting. I ought to be praying. But the next question is of equal importance, and that is, can you give me 10 things that God is doing to make sure that you grow, to make sure that you don't fail, to make sure that you're in His will, to make sure that your marriage is a blessing, to make sure that you press on? Can you give me 10 things that God's doing to keep you? And my point is, He is the good shepherd, and there are certain jobs that a shepherd has that the sheep don't have. It's the shepherd's job to lead to the green pastures. It's the shepherd's job to take the sheep where they're supposed to be in the perfect will. It's the shepherd's job to find them a mate. It's the shepherd's job to go get the lost. Now, what I'm finding is, as I ask this question in different places, people can give me 10 things they ought to do, but they can't give me 10 things God's doing. And what's that tell you? That emphasis is on yourself. Reliability is in you. And every other religion tells you what you ought to do. And it's as though your Christian growth and being fixed in that and being sure that you press on is totally dependent upon you. And that's Taoism. That's Buddhism. That's Jehovah's Witnesses. So I want to follow that up with this question. Can you list 10 things that you ought to do to make sure that your marriage is a blessing, that you go on in marriage, that your marriage is perfected, and that you grow in oneness? Well, all of you have been to enough of these kind of seminars that I'm having today that you can list those. You already knew those before you ever walked in here. But can you list 10 things God's doing to make sure your marriage is a blessing, that you don't fall apart? And where's your focus? And if your focus is on you to hold your marriage together, it isn't going to happen. You're going to have nothing but misery. But if our focus is on Him and we understand all that He's doing to hold us together, we'll make it. I told a story to the men about a millionaire that I know, and I'll just share it with the wives now, who told me he had $200 million in cash and a $1 billion empire, and he lived in Houston, and the oil market fell out, and he was losing it. And he could see that he was headed into bankruptcy. So what he did is he began to use his cash to shore up the operation, and the thing kept falling apart. So he met with a friend who was in the same condition, and he asked his friend, "What are you going to do?" He said, "We're going under." This is in 1971. And his friend said, "Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to the bank Monday morning and claim bankruptcy." And this guy had several million in cash, too. And my friend said, "You're crazy to go do that. Don't go claim bankruptcy. Why just give up now?" And he said, "You don't understand. You're going to lose everything you have. But I'm going to go to this bank, and I've borrowed from this bank $500 million. And I'm going to tell them I'm going bankrupt. And I'm not going to work at it. They've got too much invested in me to let me go down the tubes. They can't do it. They just can't allow me to go down the tubes." So in 3 years, my friend was bankrupt, and this other fellow today is a multi-billionaire. He went to the bank, and the bank said, "We can't let that happen. We got too much invested," and they brought foreign investors in and people from Saudi, and they bought stuff and all this. And the bank kept him afloat because he was bankrupt. And here's my point. God has invested His Son in every one of you here. And his son is a lot more than $500 million. And he's got too much invested in you to let you go down the tubes. He's just waiting for you to claim bankruptcy. You don't need to fight. You just have to say, hey, I can't do it. I'm bankrupt if it's up to me. My eyes are off of me and they're on to you. And he has too much invested in you to let you go down the tubes. So again, the question is, you can tell me 10 things you ought to do to keep the marriage together, but I promise you there's 1,001 things that he does to keep you together. One of my favorite passages is the vine and the branch, and he says this, when you graft a branch into the vine, that branch is cut off and there's barely any life in it at all, and it makes an all-out effort to get a hold of the vine because it's dying and it needs something. And if you look at it under a microscope, you can see a couple of little fingers under it because it's trying to reach out. It's hunting for life. And if you stick that pathetic thing into a vine, there's no way that it'll be grafted. Right? I mean, it can't hold on. The reason grafting works is the vine grower holds the branch in place, and that pathetic attempt to hold on is rewarded by a force 1,000 times greater that grabs a hold of it and holds it in. What makes it work is the power of the vine and the vine dresser, not the branch. And if you'll make a pathetic attempt to abide in Him, to look to Him, to trust in Him, that pathetic little attempt will be rewarded with a power 1,000 times greater that's holding you in place. So what'll keep you in your marriage isn't your pathetic attempt, but it'll be Him who holds you there and does 1,000 things you don't know about to make the whole thing work.